Welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the Family Counseling Center of St. Paul's, its Executive Director, Rob McCreary, and we have its Deputy Director, Kathleen Seipel. And welcome, you two. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
First, give me the mission statement.
So the Family Counseling Center of St. Paul's provides access to compassionate, culturally responsive, emotional, and behavioral health services that empower individuals and families.
And an important part is that you are a bilingual provider.
Yes. All of our program staff members, all of our program team members are bilingual. They speak Spanish, so that makes us accessible to people in the community if they speak Spanish as their primary language.
And I jumped the gun here because I started off to ask, what is the history of this group? Because St. Paul's is actually still part of the name, and I know that that is... was a flourishing parish at that time.
Yeah, it still is a parish in existence in the Hilltop neighborhood of Wilmington. Our family counseling center was started by Sister Teresa Alitz. She's a sister of St. Francis of Philadelphia. She still works with us. And she recognized way back in the early 2000s, when she was trained as a licensed mental health counselor, that there were so few qualified mental health professionals in the community available and almost none who spoke Spanish. And so she recognized the need and talked to the people in St. Paul's Parish about getting a space and began seeing people just for a free will donation, had a shoebox with her. And so people would pay what they could because everybody that she saw at first were people who didn't have health insurance or any coverage for mental health services. And that was way back in 2003. And she did that as an outreach ministry of the church. And very, very quickly, word of mouth spread and people started bringing their children. People started bringing other family members who did have insurance. Sister Teresa hired somebody to work on Saturdays, Mariella Roberts, who's also still with us. And also signed up with the various health insurance programs so that she could see people with insurance or without. And so that was the beginning, was largely word of mouth among families in the community. And then over the years, we have grown because of that. And in 2010, we separated and had our own separate organization from the church, and since then have moved out of the church and into the same community. So that's kind of the history of our connection with the St. Paul's community. And it's kind of interesting, the Sisters of St. Francis, where Sister Teresa is from, which are based up in Newman University in Aston, they have a 165-year history of serving vulnerable, especially women and families in this region. And so that mission of working with families, some of whom are the most vulnerable in our region, is really what inspired Sister Teresa to start this work at the beginning.
You're mostly in Newcastle County, but mm-hmm. you draw from the counties surrounding that, including South Jersey and Eastern PA. Describe who's coming to see you.
So we draw a lot of the people who see us, as you said, from both the neighborhood we're in and the wider region. Probably about 75 to 85% of the people we see would identify as Latino, Hispanic, and come from the various countries. Originally, their family comes from various regions in Latin America, but they've settled here, and many are, you know, multi-generational families living together where they speak Spanish and English, but have at least one family member who has limited English proficiency. So if you're working with a family, it's really important to have someone who can speak Spanish to be able to connect those members of the family into the treatment process, into the healing process.
Are you seeing a lot of first generation? Are you seeing a lot of immigrant families in this population?
Yeah. We're fortunate to be able to work with people of all ages. And so a lot of times we'll work with a child and parents together, sometimes other caregivers, aunts, uncles, and grandparents and children, sometimes individual adults. And we do see people who themselves have immigrated here from another country, or there are families where a parent or a grandparent came and the children were born here.
Now, you alluded earlier that at the beginning, a lot of people had no insurance, and you were talking about low income, and I'm going, well, that pretty much describes a lot of communities today. Is this still the case for your clientele?
Yeah, one of the things that we experience, again, with the families we work with is you might have one or two members of the family who do qualify for insurance or public benefits, but other members of the family don't. Like, maybe the parents don't have health insurance, so the kid might be able to receive treatment in a traditional location, but if that location doesn't accept insurance, then the parent or the caregiver may feel like they themselves can't afford to take care of themselves. And so we felt like it was really important, and we were able to get some support to be able to provide treatment for people regardless of their insurance status. So we might see a child at first and then realize the trauma that their parent has experienced in their home country or in their local neighborhood and the things that have happened to them. And that way we can engage the parent in their own individual treatment and support.
This has come up when we've talked to Classy on many occasions where you have families that the parents might not be documented. You might have one parent has is working permits, has visas. The children might be U.S. citizens. A parent might be on one kind of visa. A grandparent might be present. And cobbling together social services for families like this, often they go unmet. And often they don't realize that they qualify for anything.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons I think that it's so important to take a look at building in case management services, wraparound services for that support, to build that support system sort of in a holistic approach to the family, to make sure that each of the members of the family has what they need, if possible. And the only way that we can really do that effectively is to work with the partners that we have in the community. And I think we have so many opportunities out there to work with different organizations that are really receptive to doing that. It's how do you do that? How do you put it in place? How do you implement it? I think that's a key focus for us going into the new year and beyond. It's definitely part of our strategic plan as far as collaborating. I give kudos to our deputy director and my colleague Kathleen for really kind of putting a focus on that. And that's one of the areas that I think that we're going to really strive to look at and drive in 2020.
Building trust, getting someone to open up and actually participate, to join in this, is kind of tough, isn't it?
It can be very tough, yeah. I mean, building the trust is key to building any of the relationships, no matter, what type of service you're going to provide. I think with our service and the population that we serve, it's a critical aspect. It's something that we always have to keep in front of us, because it really comes down to how do we meet our clients' needs? How do we do that in a compassionate, empathetic way? How do we make sure that we're looking at each of the individuals in a family, and how do we focus on addressing exactly what they need? That's a big endeavor. Again, we can't do it alone, and that goes back into creating that trust and that the opportunity to work together.
We talk about welcome and safety as being the most important things that we can provide that starts the moment that people walk through our door. And most of the people that we see on a regular basis, their daily lives don't include a lot of welcoming, nurturing experiences. There's a lot of exposure to community violence. We're located in a neighborhood where it's common for families to hear gunshots at night. There are families that have experienced violence themselves within the family, and we have to start with a sense of welcome. We're glad you're here, and treating people with that kind of respect that we all want to receive on a regular basis. And that's what we want our relationships to look like at the start and throughout.
there are stigmas that's still attached to mental health treatment or seeking help for mental health issues. And now you're dealing with a population that is not trusting
right.
to begin with. And this is probably about pretty low on the priority list, isn't it?
Well, I think that's a great point where, yeah, people have a priority towards their own survival. And so for many, many years, we've really looked at how can we meet people where they are and where they, you know, not just wait to receive referrals, but go and meet with people who work with the families in the schools, people who work in churches, people who are their primary care medical doctors and nurse practitioners. That integration with our partners has really helped, I think, bridge that gap and normalize that mental health is health. It's, you know, it should be no more stigmatizing than, you know, a broken arm. But I think that too often people have themselves had bad experiences or been isolated or stigmatized. And so I think working with others in the community really helps that, especially the medical community.
I didn't even think to ask this earlier. How do you get referrals? How do people come to you and become clients?
People can either call us or walk in the door. And we do very frequently get calls from someone who heard from a friend or a family member that they had a good experience. And so they'll give us a call. And then we get a lot of referrals from community-based health clinics, from other services in the community, pediatric services, from schools, where the providers in those areas will recognize a need that the family they're working with has and send a referral, and then we'll give them a call. And in some cases, we'll meet with them, you know, in their primary location.
I was going to ask, do you visit in the home? Where are services actually provided?
So for the most part, people come to us. But to address the accessibility of services, we also coordinate services in the community. In some cases, that might mean meeting in the public library or meeting in another location where we can find an appropriate, safe space to meet in. And we assess that right from the first contact that we have with the people that call. So we gather their information when they call, and then we schedule what we call an admissions appointment, where they would come in and we would fill out some paperwork and they'd answer some questions. And during that, our admissions coordinator does an amazing job of very sensitively helping people through a trauma assessment, because we want to know not just what's going on with you or what's wrong with you, but what has happened in your life that has led up to this moment. Because as so many people know now, the experiences that people have had in their lives that have been traumatic emotional experiences lead to chronic mental health and physical health difficulties later in life. And so we want to assess for that at that first appointment.
I honestly thought that you would be addressing housing and income, et cetera, and you go straight to the trauma.
We do ask that right away. Now, sometimes the need is there, if the person is in a crisis and there's a safety need or a real concrete physical need right away. And so that's what we would address right away to try to refer to a service or get them started to be connected with a service that can address a food insecurity or housing insecurity or safety need.
You know, it's kind of hard to care about your mental health when your physical
exactly.
safety and security is at risk. And let's real quick here say that if you'd like more information about the Family Counseling Center of St. Paul's, they're easy to find online. Go to stpaulscounseling.org, stpaulscounseling.org. And today we are talking to its Executive Director, Rob McCreary, and Deputy Director, Kathleen Seipel. And again, stpaulscounseling.org. If you're just joining us, this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and let's get back into this. How do mental health issues manifest in a family situation? What are the things that you're going to see that you're going to address?
So we often see people who have had violence in in their family, so there's been domestic violence, or we see adults who, as children themselves, were exposed to domestic violence in the home or were abused or neglected as children. So many people have been talking about recently, and I know the state of Delaware, now being a trauma-informed state, has talked about how adverse childhood experiences or children that have had parents in conflict or an incarcerated parent or have been demeaned or bullied or abused, that the more of those experiences that a child has, the more chronic physical and mental health issues they're going to have later on. So sometimes we do see people who are in the middle of a relationship in which there's a lot of violence and they don't know where to start to move from that situation to get to a place of safety because they're so isolated and they depend financially and physically on the person that is abusing them. And so those are situations where we really want to tune into, you know, are you safe right now? And to try to connect them with tools that might help them be safe, but also help them be in control of their own decisions that they're making through this process for them and their families.
Well, I think we all know that violence is an ACE and that, mm-hmm. well, hunger is an ACE. And we're
Absolutely.
Talking about things that low income, and we're talking about populations that maybe have traveled to get to the United States or traveled to be in St. Paul's vicinity here, where we're talking again about that intergenerational trauma. Does your approach change because you're looking at maybe a house full of different generations with different issues, but all trauma-based?
One of the things that we find interesting when we do our trauma screening is many people don't identify what they experienced as abuse because the situation, the way that people relate in the family has been so normalized. And so it takes some time and within a safe relationship with the therapist to find out, well, I wasn't allowed to go to school because my father didn't want me to go to school, or I wasn't able to do anything with my own money because my partner did not want me to have control of the funds, or his parents did not want me to have control of the funds. So finding out those situations and realizing that they may be part of experience that's passed on from parents or grandparents or before that to their children is something that we see unfold a lot. The other situation that we see that affects multiple generations is oppression and sometimes racial discrimination and the experiences that people in poverty have had where they don't have a lot of agency or autonomy and they don't have a lot of choice as to or options as to how to keep themselves safe and being able to do what they want to do. So that's often something that we see, that people are fleeing from a situation where their community is not safe for them to be in, and that's why they come here seeking safety and opportunity.
Does speaking Spanish help you with defining terms and truly understanding what has happened in their lives?
We find that it opens a door, opens a window that would not otherwise be there. At the same time, we know that the people who come to us are experts in their own experiences, and so it helps if we're able to speak the same language, but it also helps if we have an approach where we ask them to help us learn about their lives, that we're not approaching as the expert who's going to
fix them
what, you know, give them exactly what they need, that we ask them, you know, you teach us what works for you. You teach us how you feel like you want to, you know, have a different experience. What have you experienced in the past that worked or didn't work? And approaching with that type of humility, no matter what language you speak, is the first priority. And then if we're able to speak the same language or able to you know, start there, we can then ask them to teach us, well, how do you describe this experience? And then be able to connect a little bit more.
You've alluded to holistic. We know that you work with domestic abuse situations and et cetera. Do you want to talk about the actual programs and how you address a family?
As we said before, we primarily offer mental health services, but in order for people to have good health and well-being, there's a lot of other things connected to that. So often we have people who struggle with just safe and stable housing, and we have a case manager who can help people walk through what some of their housing options might be to get in a safer place. Or they might struggle with their bills or with keeping employment. And many of the people we work with are very vulnerable in their employment to work with sometimes unscrupulous bosses who really take advantage of them, which can obviously have an effect on their mental health and on the well-being of their families. They have to work, but at the same time, they're sometimes physically and mentally broken down through that as well. So we try to connect people with resources to find safety and to find stability. And that takes all different forms. Sometimes it's education. Sometimes somebody is interested in starting a new path and learning, you know, learning more English and learning something else that might help them in their career. Other people have never had their own savings account, and we might connect them with, you know, a resource like Stepping Stones Credit Union, where they can start their own account and have control over their own funds and learn about how to do that. Moving from, you know, dependency or crisis to a level of stability and hopefully empowerment. And we find that after time and after those healthy, you know, affirming relationships, we often have people who then come back and want to connect with others and teach people who are in process or in crisis what they've learned. So yeah, the case management, the other piece that is important, especially with safety, is connecting to legal services that can help people be safe. So protection from abuse orders, or connecting with CLASI, as you mentioned earlier, community legal aid, or Delaware Volunteer Legal Services, so that they can have the legal protections in order to maintain their safety if they're leaving a violent relationship, they've been exposed to a crime.
Rob, how does this thing function? How do you keep the doors open?
Sure. It takes a village. It really does. And when I talk about that, I mean that we need collaboration. We need to work with other agencies. We're kind of all pieces in a puzzle, and we're trying to complement each other's services to kind of create that holistic model that can really effectively help a client and their family. For me, I think about the Sister Teresa's shoebox, and that's where it kind of goes back and starts. Kind of very humble beginnings, and we still have a great humble team. I'm blessed with that, you know, working with them every day. But thinking about like where we've come and the accomplishments, it's really been driven by trying to meet our clients' needs in a more effective way. I can give you a piece of what I mean by that too. If you'd ask where are we going as an organization, we started as a mom and pop shop basically in 2013-14. That's no longer the case. We've had to look at our infrastructure, our organizational ways and how we work together, our leadership team. A test today that I've learned more from Kathleen over the past probably year and a half than I have in a lot of the roles that I've been in the nonprofit sector the last 15 years, and I'm grateful for that. There's a real need for that because we have to make sure that the roles are right, that we're all doing what we need to do to be able to, you know, to look at our clients in the eyes every day and say, hey, we're doing the best we can for you. I'm particularly proud of the organization, the seed that was planted by Sister. I think we're doing a good job growing that. You know, when you look at just the number of clients served between 2016 and now, it's over 1,500, 500 clients alone in 2019. I know that's a number, but if you think about the impact we've had on people's lives and our community surrounding that number, I think it goes a long way. One of the things that I think we have so much opportunity to do is to take a look at, you know, how do we increase our impact in the community, whether that's eventually maybe going statewide, and we're looking at that. That's something that's down the line. But how do we really embrace the model that we're trying to put into place right now, and how do we strengthen that, you know, and how do we replicate that down the line? If we could do a good job doing that, I think then we'll be on our way to making a bigger impact in the community and in our state of Delaware. One of the things that we've done over the last couple of years is we needed a place to live. We know we needed our own home for a safe and welcome space, as Kathleen alluded to. That's so critically important. In a couple of weeks, we'll be moving into our new home at 3rd and Van Buren. It's centrally located. It's accessible by transportation. It makes people feel welcome when they see the church there. They can resonate with that. And I hope that they feel that same welcome feeling when they walk through our door. They know that they're in a safe space. Really proud of our team. When I look at the growth that we've had, not just in numbers of people, I mean, we've literally grown from 4 people to 13, 14 people over the past couple of years. It's what each of them are doing to drive what our mission is every day in the community. So I look at our case managers, I look at our clinicians, I look at our billing manager, I look at our operations manager, and I'm just grateful that, you know, we're able to have these people collectively come together and, you know, look at what we need to do to help folks. So one of the things that Kathleen had mentioned was just, you know, aligning with Governor Carney's Executive Order 24. We had been doing trauma work before that order came into place. I think that kind of brings us and gives us an opportunity to have a seat at the table, if you will, with other organizations that are putting this into focus. And they're looking at it like, hey, you know, this is something that's critically important. We need to be able to help address this and get in line with it. One of the things that Kathleen talked about, too, that's really important is above the language, the cultural responsiveness, that whole umbrella, like how do you, you know, communicate and work with clients and how do you make them feel welcome? It's really critically important. I'm just thinking about the training that we did yesterday at our location and what that meant. We had a gentleman who is a doctor position at Widener University. Kathleen, you could probably tell a little bit more about this, but it's all about, like, how do we address our clients' needs? How do we interact with them? What do we need to think about when we approach them? This dealt with human sexuality and you know, gender and so forth, things that are critically important, even beyond the folks that we serve, the particular, our forte is serving the Hispanic population. But it really is, it's universal. If you look at all the changes and things that are going on in the world, it's paying particular attention to things like that is really key. I think it's going to, trainings like that and development like that, I'm grateful that we have the opportunity to do. We place a big emphasis on professional development, not just in the clinical, you know, just service delivery realm, but just with whatever's happening that we might be able to, you know, be of help with. So one of the other things I think that's really important is when we look at our strategic plan and the way in which we want to operate the organization and the way which we want to become effective, I think it really starts with the safe and welcome place, like Kathleen talked about. It's more than just, you know, getting the funding in the door, which is really important. That's critical. I could talk a little bit about that. But without the program in place and without the approach, you have to have that. That's the foundation. That's the key ingredient. If you don't have that, you don't have much to fall back on. And then I think if we don't have that in place, we're doing our clients a disservice.
If I am one of your peers and I would like to learn more about what you are doing, if I'm law enforcement or emergency rooms, et cetera, and I would like to learn more about what you are doing, or I happen to be a donor, should I go to your website?
Absolutely. StPaulsCounseling.org is our website. You can call me. I'm in an executive director role, but I'm also sort of heading up the funding development area too, and that's kind of my background. Again, my name is Rob. I'd welcome the opportunity to talk with folks that are interested in our services and the opportunity for us to show you what we're doing in our community and to help clients.
I alluded to peers, et cetera. You obviously play nice with others, so organizations who are hearing this would be interested in reaching out to you as well.
Absolutely. Give us a call. The main number of the office is 302-576-4136, and we welcome people who just want to come and visit and check us out. So definitely give a call or check out the website. site. And we really do need to connect with others in the community. That's how we do the work that we do, and we're better for it. So,
so obviously, if I'm a community leader, I should be reaching out
to you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We want to learn more.
And obviously, the place to go for any information that we talked about, stpaulscounseling.org. stpaulscounseling.org for Family Counseling Center of St. Paul's. And today, my guests have been its Executive Director, Rob McCreary, and Deputy Director, Kathleen Seipel. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.